Thank you very much, Mark. So, like Mark said, at K-State, we've been working the last few years on a project. Actually, was the idea of Dr. Bob Weber, and unfortunately, he's giving us something somewhere else and wasn't able to talk about this. And the majority of the work was actually done not by us, but by our graduate students. Lane Geis is there in the back, and then Brady Jensen, who is actually here at Brookings. He's an instructor in the animal science department here, but had a committee meeting right now, so he couldn't be here either. So I get the privilege of talking a little bit about this project and some of the work that we've done so far. All right, so really the question came up, like I said, through a lot of Dr. Weber's extension work, where a lot of the producers have been talking recently, maybe the last 5 or so years, about they're seeing more problems with beaten legs. Just out in the cow herd, bulls and cows, it just seems to be becoming a bigger problem than it has in the past. And the thought is that we've intensely selected for lots of other traits, production traits, carcass traits, whatever. And in that process, maybe we've neglected keeping track of some of those structure traits and some of those things we think might be related to longevity. And so when we think about why that's a problem, one thing that may not be top of mind, but lame cattle are really a welfare issue. It's not just about production. Lame cattle, especially when you get to the plant, are definitely a welfare issue and a perception problem for us. But also, really what we think about as producers would be longevity. We know that if cattle don't stay sound in the herd, they're going to leave the herd, and that's obviously an expensive process for us with it, replacements both on heifers and bulls. So a problem that we thought needed at least a little bit of attention. Well, there's been work done for many, many years that show, lots of papers show that if you can keep cattle in the herd longer, it impacts the profitability of your operation. Obviously, mature cows produce more pounds of calf. Replacement heifers cost a lot of money. There's been different studies over the years, but we think somewhere around 5 or 6 calves to pay for herself. And so keeping those cows around longer is an important component to productivity. So what are some problems or some issues we have to deal with when we think about selecting for feet and legs? Well, the first thing is, what do we select on? And I think if you ask 10 different producers, you might get 10 different answers about what are the important components of structural soundness. And so figuring out what things to score, how to score them, coming up with a system to score them, and then really we think that there are structural traits that relate to longevity in the cow herd, but that's pretty anecdotal. There hasn't really been a lot of work over the years that has really demonstrated that relationship between soundness traits and actual length of life in the cow herd. So looking at some of those relationships is pretty important. Now, if we can figure out a way to score soundness, to score feet and leg traits, then we can start to understand those relationships and determine what might be related to longevity. And anytime you put a number on something, you can put it in an evaluation. And so we can develop then a genetic evaluation that can help us make selection for some of these traits. And this group all knows that once we have something in an EPP format, that allows the most effective form of selection. So we sat down to kind of brainstorm what are the types of things that we might look at, what sort of traits might we measure, and you come up with kind of a laundry list of traits. And we kind of went through this list and came up with some that we thought might be useful and might have a relationship to longevity. But then we went to the literature and looked to see what was out there. And so one place where they've done a little more work on this than we have, and we heard about this morning too, is the dairy industry. They've been looking at feet and leg traits and soundness traits for quite a while now. And they've shown that there are some moderate genetic correlations between some of their type traits, or their feet and leg traits, and longevity and productive life in the herd. Overall longevity tends to be pretty lowly heritable. And so what they like to do is use these feet and leg traits or structure traits as indicators to help them predict longevity in the cow herd. So some of the work that's been done in dairy has shown some low to maybe approaching moderate heritabilities for some of the feet and leg scores, things that we would consider maybe low, but certainly could potentially make genetic progress on. Currently, the American Holstein Association does a genetic evaluation for type traits. They look at 4 different, well, they have more than just this, but 4 of them specifically involve feet and legs. We've got rear legs, both side view and rear view. and then foot angle, and then they have sort of an overall score, a foot and leg score. And those heritabilities that they found in their evaluation line up fairly well with what the literature shown, low to approaching moderate heritability for some of them. And then what's interesting is they put those traits into an index. So they actually have a feet and leg index that they make selection on. And that's a whole other topic, is how you incorporate traits potentially with an intermediate optimum into an index, which is maybe a discussion for a different day. But again, looking in the literature, there has been work done in the beef industry, not as much, but there has been some. Nearly 20 years ago, the American Simmental Association started looking at this and had some trained evaluators, and they specifically looked at side view, rear leg, and foot pastern angle, and again, moderate heritabilities for those traits. There's been a little bit of work done in Europe with some Chionea cattle, and what was interesting there is they looked at the different structure traits and calculated a probability of culling based on those traits, and found that specifically in the hind leg, that if they were straight-legged, they had about a 60% higher probability of being culled from the herd than those that were moderate. Single-hocked, not as bad in that particular study. So a little bit of work in Europe. Probably where most of the recent work has been done in the beef industry, at least, has been in Australia. Australian Angus has been doing evaluation of feet and legs for a while now. And so one of the earlier papers looked at specifically rear and front foot angle, claw shape. So we'll look at pictures, but things like scissor claw, for example. And then the set to the rear leg, and actually found moderate heritabilities for most of those traits. A lot of this particular study also looked at different statistical models for analyzing those, and so there's a lot of sort of technical things there, but found mostly moderate heritabilities, and between some pairs of traits, quite high genetic correlations. You know, as we would expect, you would think that front and hind legs would be highly correlated, and they foot angles, and they do seem to be. So some interesting work that came out of Australia. And this particular work led to them actually incorporating a large-scale genetic evaluation. They have feet scores in their regular genetic evaluation and produce routinely EBVs on five different traits. EBV is the Australian version of REPD. So what they look at is both front and hind feet, the claw shape, so from open divergent to scissor claw. Front and back angle, so foot angle, from very straight to very sloped. And they look at the rear leg, and so posty-legged to sickle-hocked, and then from back, bow-legged to cow-hocked. And so they score all of those and put them into their genetic evaluation. Now here in America, recently, American Angus Association has come out with their EPDs for foot traits, and I believe Kelly talked about that few minutes ago in the other room, so if you have questions about their evaluation, talk to Kelly, but they're continuing to work on that and have their EPD sort of up and going for their two traits that they're looking at, claw and foot angle. So with this background, then, we sat down to sort of design what we wanted to do at K-State, and we worked with Red Angus and Simmental. Data collection is ongoing with Simmental, so the results we're going to present here are specifically from the Red Angus population that we got data for to really look at those different relationships. So we ended up with about 1,800 cattle, Red Angus cattle, and we decided on a list of 14 traits, which we're going to find out is overkill, but at the time you don't know, right? So we wanted to score everything and just see what happened and see what traits sort of came out as important. And so 14 different traits, and we'll kind of briefly go through what those are. We took a body condition score on all the animals, the normal one that we're used to. So one thing we wanted to look at was most of the other studies had sort of a foot angle type trait, sort of lumped in foot and pastern together, depth of the heel as well as the angle. And we wanted to separate those, and so we looked at both the hoof angle, steep to shallow, as well as the heel depth as separate traits. And so there is a 1 to 100 score for both of those. Another thing we were able to develop, I should have mentioned, is we have some software that we were able to use to develop sort of a slider scoring system on tablets. And so in the field, the evaluators didn't have to write anything down or type anything in. They just move that little slider for each animal where it needed to go and enter that data. So the scores could be anything from 1 to 100 for each of those traits. So we had hoof angle and heel depth on the front foot. Then we also looked at the claw shape, similar, again, to the Australian study. And the our grad students took some pictures when they were out in the field of some ones that were more extreme just to show some of what we were seeing out there. Then the same thing on the rear foot, hoof angle, heel depth, as well as claw shape on the rear feet. One thing we wanted to look at was just an estimate of size of hoof. And so this was just a visual estimate. We're not actually out there measuring how big the hooves were. This was just the evaluator saying, is this a small-footed or a big-footed animal? So again, just a 1 to 100 scale. On the front leg, we looked at the front leg shape from the side, so basically buck-kneed to calf-kneed. And then on the from the front angle, looked separately both at the knee orientation, so bow-legged to knock-kneed, as well as the front foot orientation, so pigeon-toed and splay-footed. So those were separate scores on the front feet. And then on the rear leg, side view again, so posty-legged to sickle-hocked, as well as bow-legged and cow-hocked from the rear. And so those were all the specific traits that they evaluated. And then the last thing they scored on each animal was what we called a composite. And so that was just the evaluator stepping back, looking at the overall animal and saying good, bad, and putting them on that scale. This is the only one with a slightly different scale. We went that from 1 to 50, with 50 being the best, thinking at the time that all of our others, if we assumed some sort of intermediate optimum, 50 would sort of be optimum, and so that put this on the same sort of numerical scale. But that's just an overall estimate of the overall soundness of those animals. So once we did that, well, once we established the scoring system, all the animals were scored by two different evaluators, and then we averaged those scores. They had to be registered animals so that we could get pedigrees and production data as well. So after some data editing, we ended up with over 1,700 animals in the analysis, and we got the pedigrees, again, from Red Angus, about 13,000 animals total in the pedigree. If we look at just what kinds of animals we scored, predominantly young cattle, so a lot of yearling and two-year-old cattle for sure, but when the students went out to the farms to score cattle, maybe they had the main job might have been to score the group of bulls that were going through the sale, but hey, there's the cows, let's go score them while we're here, kind of a thing. And so we did get some records, not a lot, but some records on older females. Obviously, if we look at the age distribution, that's going to be a little bit different between males and females because we didn't have big groups of older bulls standing around. So the bulls were all 1 and 2 year olds, but the females, we did get some of those older cows. As you might expect, if we just look at the means of the different traits, they're all centered right around 50 or so, where we would expect. Standard deviations generally around 5 to 6 for most of those traits. And more interestingly, we start looking at the heritabilities. We were encouraged that they seem to kind of line up with what the literature said. And so we were kind of finding similar things to what other researchers have found, where most of our traits are sort of in that lowly teen to moderately heritable range. Ideally, we would have analyzed all of these traits together in one big model, but you guys know the 14 traits don't go in model very well, and so because we do want to get to the correlations, we ended up doing a series of bivariate models to estimate heritabilities and correlations, and so these would be the average heritabilities over all of those different bivariate models with the standard errors. And so again, we're encouraged that what we saw was very much in line with what a lot of the literature had said, both in beef and dairy. What was actually maybe, I don't know, more interesting, but at least very interesting, is some of the correlations among the traits. And so I'm going to spend a few minutes talking about these, and sometimes you have to keep in mind which end of the scale is which end of the trait, so we'll kind of go through these. One thing to notice, first of all, is of all the foot angle and heel depth traits, both front and rear, when you see correlations like this, that pretty much tells you that we're kind of wasting our time to measure all of those things on both feet, right? And so it seems that we can probably do one measurement of that front foot angle heel depth trait, whether it's front or back, that maybe doesn't really matter, but those traits all really do seem to be about the same. So that kind of encouraged us that we could simplify our scoring system quite a bit there. 75% genetic or 75 genetic correlation here with claw shape on front ear, so that's not quite as much the same trait, but maybe with some more data we might be able to figure out if that's something that we need to score separately or perhaps could just give one score for claw shape. What was interesting, and I didn't put on obviously all the correlations because with 14 traits by 14 traits, that's, I don't know how many genetic correlations that is, but it's a lot. But there was a lot of them that were virtually zero, right? And so, for example, there really was no relationship between that angle, foot angle, and heel depth with the claw shape. Those were unrelated. If we look at some of the correlations between the front feet with some of the other leg traits, some of the ones that popped up as significant and interesting, if we look at the front feet, we see that there was some relationship between the front feet and the front leg. So if we look at this first one, what this is saying is that a more upright hoof is more associated with being buck-kneed and a more sloped hoof is more associated with being calf-kneed, which might be expected. Similarly, those tall heels are associated with being more buck-kneed and the shallower heels are more associated with being calf-kneed. When we look at that rear leg, so here, the rear leg side view, the upright hoof, tall heel, tend to be more associated with posty-legged animals, and the more shallow hoof, sloped hoof, and shallow heel tend to be more associated with sickle hocks. Again, might be expected. We look at the front feet, hoof angle, and heel depth with the rear view. So maybe it didn't make as much sense when you think about it, but the upright hoof and the tall heel was more associated with bow-legged on the back end, whereas the sloping hoof and low heel was associated more with being cow-hocked. So we had some modest correlations there. Is it possible that if the feet traits are the ones we're most interested in, could leg traits be used as indicators? Possibly, because we did have some of those moderate correlations. If we look then at rear feet traits and some of the correlations that showed up there with legs. First of all, if we look at rear feet, hoof angle and hoof depth with the side view, what we find is that the upright hoof and tall heel was more associated with posty-legged animals, and the sloped hoof and low heel was more associated with sickle-hocked animals. Both of the rear foot angles with the rear view animals, or rear view of the animals, the upright hoof and tall heel was more associated with bow-legged, and the sloped hoof low heel was more associated with cow-hocked. What's kind of interesting is that the claw shape showed a moderate genetic relationship with front leg orientation. So I'm not exactly sure why that one came up, but it did. It was a moderate association where the open divergent claws were associated with being more bow-legged and more pigeon-toed, whereas the scissor claws were more associated with being more knock-kneed and splay-footed. There was a negative relationship, and again, the positive and negative just tells you which end of the scale you're looking at, but this last one showed that more open divergent claws were associated with being more post-legged. So again, we had some modest correlations between both the front and rear legs with some of the rear feet traits. Could they be indicators of each other? That's certainly a possibility. If we just look at some correlations then among the different leg traits, front end and hind leg, we saw that bow-legged animals were associated with being buck-kneed, where more knock-kneed animals were also tend to be more calf-kneed. Animals that were pigeon-toed tended to be more buck-kneed, and animals that were more splay-footed tended to be more calf-kneed. This one, this 95, that's another red flag, right, to tell us that we're probably measuring the same thing, and I think that's probably true if we're looking at the front leg from the front. That's the knee and the hoof orientation. That would make sense that those probably go together. probably can be evaluated together as one trait. We also saw some correlations between the rear leg and the front leg, and moderate genetic correlations in that more posty-legged animals tended to be more bow-legged and pigeon-toed, and more sickle-hawk animals tended to be more knock-kneed and splay-footed. So we have some front leg traits that are pretty highly correlated with each other. Again, there's many, many, many other correlations between all these different pairwise, and most of them are virtually zero. And it does appear that we can maybe simplify our scale there and combine those two into one score. So some of the other things we measure, like body condition score composite, some of those came up as interesting correlations. A decently high genetic correlation between claw and body condition. And the direction of this one would show that thin cows tended to be more open divergent claws, and fat cows tended to have more scissored claws. The one maybe more expected, the sporty, thin cows tended to be small-footed, fat cows tended to be a little bigger-footed. Thin cows also tended to be a little bit more bow-legged and pigeon-toed in front. Fat cows tended to be a little more knock-kneed and splay-footed. Actually, that's pretty high genetic correlations there. And then our composite score, which, remember, was just the overall subjective score of the overall soundness of that cow, was highly correlated or moderately correlated with several different subcomponents. And really what this tells me is that these probably are the things that the evaluator is picking out unconsciously when they give that overall score, that they're highly influenced by that front leg and that rear leg side view, as well as the hoof angle and depth. So that's, to me, that's what that's saying, is that those are the things that are driving that composite score. So that was interesting, I guess, academically. But really the question is, how do soundness traits relate to longevity in the herd and potentially other production traits as well? So what we did then was to get not just the pedigrees from Red Angus, but they sent us the EPDs on those animals as well. And so then we were able to look at correlations between the structure traits and the production EPDs that those animals would have. And so again, we'd love to throw all of those traits together into a great big model and run it all together, but that doesn't work. So we divided the structure traits into groups, so front limb, rear limb, and then sort of a et al. Category, and then looked at the genetic correlations between those traits and the EPDs, the production traits. So what we got from Red Angus was basically their suite of EPDs as well as their indexes that you would normally be used to seeing. And so again, there's tons and tons of correlations here, and we'll pick out some of the ones that are a little bit more interesting. So one thing you'll notice is nothing jumps out. There's no magic silver bullet that we can measure this one structure trait and we're going to solve stability. So there's nothing huge, and that's probably what we would expect. But what we see is there are some small to maybe even moderate genetic correlations between some of the structure traits and some of the production traits. So if we kind of look, start up here in the upper left, in general what we're showing here, and this is front hoof angle and front hoof depth, is that generally the more sloping hoof, lower heel, was associated with a little bit lower birth weight, weaning weight, and yearling weight, so a little bit lower growth, a little bit lower heifer pregnancy, and maybe a little bit higher Cabianese maternal. Again, the stars show statistical significance, but again, they're all relatively small correlations. This is the front leg side view, and we see there's some correlations there. The direction here would show that more calf need, so if the animal's more calf need, that was associated with slightly higher growth, slightly higher stability, and higher indexes, both grid and herd builder. Maintenance energy was interesting. There seemed to be some relationships with maintenance energy. And again, in general, the lower maintenance energy was associated with a taller hoof, a taller heel, more upright hoof, being more calf-kneed, knock-kneed, and splay-footed. Again, a little bit more associated with lower maintenance energy. The front knee and hoof, which remember these two tend to look like a lot like the same trait. This is knee orientation and hoof orientation on that front leg. And so they showed similar relationships with the production traits where pigeon-toed and bow-legged animals was associated with a little bit higher weaning weight, but maybe a little bit lower stayability in curb builder is the direction there. And then our composite score was higher composite, which would be better structured, was associated with a little bit higher leaning weight, a little bit higher maintenance energy, but a little bit lower stayability in curb builder. So again, some interesting things, nothing huge. We're talking about small correlations, but interesting. When we look at the rear limb traits in those production EPDs, not as much sort of came up as maybe more important correlations. We did see a little bit here where we had claw shape and rear leg side view, and so in this case, more scissor claws was associated with lower stayability and herd builder. That would be maybe more expected. More sickle-hawked animals were actually associated with higher stability and herd builder. So that was interesting. And then sort of our other things that we measured that we lumped into that last group, body condition score was highly related to a lot, or not highly, was moderately related to some of our APDs, which is not surprising. Higher body condition score was associated with higher growth. We would expect that probably, higher grid index, but actually lower heifer pregnancy, cavities, maternal, and stability, and herd builder, actually. The front feet, this is the front claw. This one didn't fit in the front feet. We didn't have enough power in that analysis, so we put it here. The front claw shape was actually showed that more scissor claws were associated with lower birth weight, but actually a little bit more growth. Foot size was kind of interesting. That came up fairly highly correlated, which makes sense, right? The bigger animals have higher weaning weights and yearling weights. That's we expect to see that. And higher on the grid and index. Our composite score in this case was associated with higher growth as well as stability and indexes. And so again, not huge correlations, but things that are showing some tendencies to some relationships. So one kind of last thing that we looked at was, we remember our slider was a 1 to 100, but we also realized that's maybe a little overkill as well. And so we transformed those on just a 1 to 10 scale. So whatever the score gave it as a 56, it became a 50, for example. So we transformed those to something, so put the data on the 1 to 10, and actually found small differences for most traits and heritabilities. Not huge. A lot of times the heritability went down maybe a percentage or two. On that less granular scale, but probably would indicate that a simpler 1 to 10 scale is probably appropriate. We're still capturing a lot of the variation that exists in those traits and would be simpler for the producer. I swear I didn't say anything different. Well, we're close. I don't have more data. So a few takeaway messages. Was that, like I said, we didn't really find any silver bullets or any one thing, oh my gosh, we can measure this and we'll solve longevity in the cowbird. We didn't find anything like that, but there did seem to be some traits that we could measure that would have some low relationships to stability and perhaps could be used to predict stability at younger ages. We think the 1 to 9 scoring system is probably appropriate. 1 to 100 probably isn't necessary. And we certainly can simplify the scoring system. We're not going to recommend that you score 14 traits. That didn't seem to probably make a whole lot of sense. And there's certainly some things that we can do to, you know, collect additional data and really more refine that. But a simpler scoring system than 14 traits would certainly be appropriate. And like I said, we're working on getting more data from Simmental's to go ahead and do the analysis there. But we certainly need more data from Red Angus to augment that analysis. You know, one thing that we have talked about but haven't done yet is, you know, we measured a few cows. I would be interested in measuring the same set of cows for several years and what happens to some of these structured traits as that cow ages, and I don't think we really know that at this point. So those are some things that, you know, this has been a good start, but I think there's a lot of work that needs to be done, and I think that there's certainly a lot of questions that need to be answered. So with that, I'd be happy to let Lane take any questions.